Return to Northmoor, Episode 3, running time, 40 minutes.
Killer crabs!
A homunculus.
The Doctor Who theme.
A 10-year-old giggling.
Copious amounts of toilet flushing.
Camping.
Life on the river.
A mysterious coin.
Is that poison on your fingers?
Did I see something?
David Tennant.
All coming up on Return to Northmoor.
Welcome to Return to Northmoor. I'm Kim.
And I'm Tim.
And in this episode, we are going over highlights of actual play.
That's right. You're going to hear how it actually ran when I tried to run the scenario that I outlined in our previous episode.
There's about three players here, with the addition of a 10-year-old as well.
Correct. Our 10-year-old crashed our gaming session. He was supposed to be down the hall watching Doctor Who. Unfortunately, he decided we were far more interesting.
Well, part of that is because he helped write the scenario, so he had a vested interest.
Yes, and he was very interested to see how it all came out.
So this first clip is going to be a cargo discussion of the crew of the Black Cat. We are also establishing the dubious nature of the Raftmaster.
Right, so I've set the scene that everyone is on the raft, the Blackwater Cat, except for one of the participants who is off on a side quest because he could not make it that night. The kind of scene setting that I did has taken place right before this, and then the group is asking some questions about what's going on the raft. Make sure to listen at the end of the clip for Dan's horrible pun.
But what are we carrying, incidentally?
Well, you know for sure that you're carrying pots and pans, cooking utensils, tents.
Hard goods.
Okay. He could be carrying body parts for all we know, knowing the way this guy operates.
You know for sure about half the cargo. The other half of the cargo, you're not completely sure of.
You don't
but
want to know.
We're very sure that there's shady things on the boat.
Oh, yes, you're very sure that there's shady things on the boat.
When has there not been shady things?
All right, so in our next clip, the group has gone down the river and they've discovered there's a raft jammed in the narrows ahead of them and they've had to pull over and anchor to the side and they're trying to decide what to do next.
The crew is making some terrain observations and you will find that the warlock, yes, that would be me, has very poor perception.
Right, so I'm using the new 4E passive perception rules, and so when she looks over at the sandbar, she doesn't notice all this stuff I've described, as you will quickly find out.
Mind you, the rogue that is sneaking on shore has no problem seeing that.
Ash, can you step off of the raft and onto the sandbar? And as you do so, you notice that there's sort of a strange pattern in the sand here on the sandbar. Every here and there, there's a little circle in the sand that's about 3 foot across. There's not a lot of them, but there's just enough that it kind of comes to your attention. And there's a circle, and there's sort of a little bit of a mound of sand. Some of them are bigger than others. You know, they're here and there.
I'll be quiet and make it my way to the screw brush trap.
Can I see these from where I'm standing on the barge?
Yes.
What's happening downriver?
You don't notice them, though, because...
I don't notice
you're
them.
You're not perceptive enough, I'm afraid.
All right.
So in this next clip, the crabs attack for the first time, as well as the setup for the fact that the raft is sort of pulling out of the sandbar, and it's all a very unstable situation. Interesting in this clip is the fact that Jeff makes fun of the fact that clerics in 4th edition have so many more hit points now. When he takes 5 points from the crab, he declares that his character is dead.
In general, all of the characters have a large number of hit points, which is kind of interesting to get used to when you first start playing. I have made a comment about marine dark mantles, and that is a reference to earlier play in another campaign where every monster that we encountered was a dark mantle, and it ended up killing a number of characters on the way.
Yeah, we were playing the world's largest dungeon module, and the first, third of that thing, there's dark mantles and the fiendish dark mantles everywhere.
And so we have an ongoing joke amongst the gaming group of, oh, I guess it's a dark mantle.
You'll also hear gratuitous giggling from the 10-year-old, as well as some sound effects that he supplied. I've tried to edit most of that out, but this clip is full of them.
It's also nice to have a little bit of enthusiasm for the game, and it's nice to see it through fresh eyes.
Indeed.
Since I don't see anything else moving in the sandbar, I'm going to get off the boat.
Make me a D20 check.
19.
The rope is starting to groan a bit.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I will move to the back of the boat.
So where's our anchor?
There's an anchor. The primary anchor's in the front, but there's also an anchor in the back.
And so it's taunt, like, this way, then.
That's correct. Make me another d20 check, Beth.
Seth rolls a 2.
Okay. So, Seth, as you step onto this piece of sand, you hear a crunching sound, like you stepped on, like, a seashell or something.
Okay.
And then suddenly something explodes up from under your foot on a jet of water.
A bouncing Betty. Nice.
And knocks you backwards. And a very large, about 3-foot diameter, horseshoe crab-looking thing with a long stinger tail has shot up out of the sand on this jet of water coming from a tube under its body and knocked you back. And it's going to try to land on your head.
It's a marine dark mantle.
I will call out.
Please go ahead and roll initiative, everyone. So as it's coming down to you, it has these large eyes that are on stalks.
I bash them off.
And as it's coming down, the stalks point down at you, like perhaps the eyes on a chameleon. You know how they can point in different directions.
Yeah.
Blood shoots out from under the eyes and sprays at you.
We have crabs.
You have crabs, my friend.
Okay, does it look at your murder change? No. The blood splashes all over your face and everything, but you shake it off, and that will bite you.
We'll try.
And it will get a 21 versus AC, which does indeed hit you, for 5 points of damage.
Chomp.
The nasty mandibles chomp into your shoulder, and then it falls to the ground, and you see a bit of stirring in the sand nearby as well.
Cleric has died.
This is 4th edition.
First blood, last blood.
5-point wound.
So in this next clip, Jeff is going to highlight the fact that being covered with the crab's blood makes it look like he's already been bloody, then he's horribly damaged.
Also, you'll notice that, again, the warlock displays her very poor perception. And that's to highlight that not all the characters have the opportunity to pick up a spot or search type of skill check. In this game, it is more of an insight or perception, and that is dictated by your character class.
Right. That is probably the thing that we had the hardest time remembering between the switch from 3 to 4 is what the names of particular skills were, and you'll hear that in later clips as well.
Also, the characters don't get an automatic pick. Their character class determines which skill checks they get, and then you can select, I believe, 1 or 2.
Depending on the class.
Depending on the class, but that doesn't automatically assure you that you're going to have perception.
And if your wisdom is low.
Which, of course, the warlock doesn't get.
What does the blood look like?
The blood is viscous, dark, and
does it look like blood?
It looks like blood, and it smells terrible.
So I look like I'm bloody.
Yeah, he looks just covered with blood.
Can I see what has attacked him?
No, you can't.
What has attacked you? Did you stumble and fall?
Yeah, and you are knocked prone, by the way. So yes, you were sitting on your teacup.
Some kind of a crab spit in my eye.
So in this next clip, Seth manages to critically hit one of the crabs and finishes it off. I wanted to highlight the fact that these crits do now max damage as opposed to double damage, but it's still awfully exciting when they happen. And I also wanted to highlight at the very end of the clip, you'll hear Jeff say, "Are we unencountered?" And of course, in 4th edition, that's extremely important as to whether you're still in an encounter or not, because between encounters, you can spend healing surges and that sort of thing. And it's interesting. It's kind of a new vernacular for the game is, you know, are we unencountered?
I will attempt to attack it. Natural 20.
You will do maximum damage. It cracks in half and its guts spray across the sand and a big spray of water comes out of it as the bladder inside it that was powering its little jet. Pops and
hideous looking.
And it smells awful. This blood that was all over you just kind of leaks out of its glands, and it smells like a toxic waste.
Tremors.
Yeah.
So we won't be cooking this crab.
Yep.
No sashimi tonight. Are you okay, Seth?
Blah. Pui. I seem to be fine.
There's plenty of water to wash off with.
I'll sneak up another couple of species.
Get on the raft, I'll carry you.
Are we unencountered?
So in the next clip, all the crabs have been defeated, and the group is dealing with the fact that the anchor chains are being sucked down into the sandbar.
Thereby making some quicksand problems. We are, at that point, starting to lose the anchors. You will also hear me having an issue with the scale of the map and the way it was drawn, because it just didn't make sense to my way of thinking.
There was a lot of scribbling on that map.
Yes, and then you get to hear my display of girly grunts.
Yes, and you might hear the 10-year-old's girly grunts as well. He seemed to want to do that sound effect.
Don't see any more.
All right. Also, just check the side of the boat. Look for any more skittering. You little ones.
Babies.
As I'm climbing onto the
ropes, make sure there's nothing going up the rope.
As I'm climbing onto the boat, What is the status of the anchor chain and rope?
The anchor rope is very taut, and you're guessing that based on the terrain of the sandbar that you just went across,
yes,
the water is washing the sand. It's flooding the sand, so it's quicksand, kind of. And
so the anchor is...
The anchor is just getting sucked down into the sandbar.
Well, how does the progress up here look?
Well, actually, it looks like they're almost free. They have finally dug up the back corner of the boat, which had gotten heavily stuck.
Lovely.
I would say undo the back anchor, let the boat turn, and then we'll undo the front anchor.
Do we have enough room? We don't have enough room to turn.
This is
well, you do.
Not to scale.
Yeah, this is not perfect. So remember, this is water here, so you've got some room.
Okay.
It's very tight. That's part of the reason this is such a tricky area.
Not be able to get the anchors back.
So you haul that anchor in, and you need to make a strength check. It is sucked deep into the sandbar.
Great. I am unable to budge the...
Okay. You hear a girly grunt from the back of the boat.
Oh!
All right, we'll try it a different way.
And now we hear a manly grunt.
A few minutes later, they're still trying to get the anchors up out of the sandbar so that it doesn't pull the raft over onto its side and out of the river. And you will hear many attempts to do so, and you will definitely hear the 10-year-old grunting this time.
Mechanistically, you'll notice that we can still do assists on checks. So that's something to keep in mind for our Ope.
All right, so Oshkin heads to the back, and the two of you are on the back rope.
I'll assist him.
You see the anchors are sucking in deeper. The boat in front of you is free and is headed down the river at kind of a high rate of speed. The river seems to have picked up a bit. You see some storm clouds approaching.
We're in a narrow spot, too, so.
I'll assist you. I got it this time.
12.
I got a 17.
Okay, so what's your total strength? I guess for this you can use athletics. I don't think you're using
it. I got a 17.
Plus 5, 17.
So with 2 17s, the two of you managed to haul the anchor up. It's incredibly difficult. So you managed to pull the anchor up onto the boat in the back. Let's see what's going on in the front. The boat's swinging around wildly in the current.
The drama around the sandbar is continuing as they are trying to get the boat spun around. One of the anchors is free, and now the boat is spinning around wildly in the current. The raftmaster has returned at this point and is trying to get them to get their act together and get the boat down the river.
During our character creation, we decided that the raftmaster wasn't exactly the most stand-up kind of guy. And in this clip, you can see role-playing to that effect in that the warlock has decided to have conversations that aren't exactly respectful.
Must be still partly dazed.
The boat is swinging around, and the back is just about to hit the rear sandbar. Are the two of you going to
pull it? Pull it.
The two of you grab the poles and shove the boat so that it stays even, which is a good thing.
Yeah. What's that smell?
I tried to wash. We'll deal with it later.
Oh, that's really hideous.
It is
really
hideous.
The anchor does not pull, and in fact, with those two rolls, the rope snaps.
Okay,
bang! The raft breaks free and starts skidding down the river.
It is no longer our problem.
And Finn's like, oh, that was my favorite anchor! Had that engraved by my grandpappy.
You picked that up at the last port.
So a few minutes later, the raft is heading merrily on its way down the river, and all is well. Unfortunately, they now have to talk to the raftmaster. And so there's a little bit of a discussion about what the raftmaster learned while he was over at the other raft chatting. And this is an important, it's a little bit of a longer clip. It's an important clip, though, because I wanted to highlight one of the rumors and sort of how I brought it out. You can also hear how I have a great voice and accent for the raftmaster at the beginning of the clip, but by the end of the clip, I've completely lost it.
See there, Finn.
Oh, Marlo. Well, you know, we just talked about the river business. Just talked about how things are around here. Talked about the latest finds at the Lost Village. You know, rumor has it that the Merchant Guild's moving in up there. Hear about that?
Some.
Well, you know, the old king, he's getting pretty old. And hasn't really named a successor. In fact, of the 5 wives he's had, none have been able to bear a male child. Some people say he's cursed. The Merchant Guild's making a big case that the city's going to be in ruins without a strong leader, and that, well, if he can't name a successor, maybe they better take charge of the city.
Mm.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, as a businessman, I don't care really who's in charge as long as they don't hamper business done, and being a Merchant Guild, they're not likely to do so. A lot of people around here are bitching that the taxes might go up, though, since the king's been awfully lax around taxing this area, given, the produce, and especially all the gold they've been finding up in the Lost Village.
makes you think.
Do they only charge a treasure tax, or is there other? Do they come collecting taxes, or is there a resident tax collection?
There has been no tax collection past about 20 miles outside the big city for years.
A few minutes later, they are still continuing their discussion with the raft master, and he has decided that he wants to renegotiate the percentage of profit that Ashkin is getting off of the trip. So a discussion ensues where it becomes clear that the raft master is not only not a very scrupulous person, but not a very nice person, and that he doesn't like elves very much, and that he's sort of misogynistic and so forth. And I would say that Kim's character responds in kind.
Well, and this really highlights the fact that in 4.0, that we see a little bit of a change in alignment status, where you can be good, you can be evil, but there's also unaligned. So there's a lot more shades of gray, which is somewhat more realistic.
And why would you think you need 25 followers?
Well, like I said, my boat's what's keeping the cargo afloat.
So you're threatening to throw it off if you don't get a bigger cut?
Oh, no, I'm just threatening to, I don't know, maybe fire you off the boat before we get there, perhaps? Yeah. Maybe take 100%.
Word gets around. If you want to renege on a deal, you know, as a businessman, I'm sure that would be a pretty, inconvenient ploy, wouldn't it? Unless you're planning to kill me.
Well, you're not exactly known as the most straightforward man in business.
Sure, I got witnesses.
Indeed, he does.
Wow.
Should you renege on his deal, what guarantees do I have that you won't renege on mine?
I'm not reneging, I'm just renegotiating. There's a big difference.
You forget, I know where you sleep.
But you don't visit nearly often enough.
Oh, but you don't want a warlock's curse on you now, would you?
It's just a shame that pretty elf girl like you gets all warlocky like that, but I don't understand that.
The stars might take away their brilliance for you.
The deal stands or all deals are off.
Fine, fine. Just trying to, you know, work a little business. I think I'll go back to the stand
the other
there.
Side of the ship.
Well, he's got this little kind of hammock off to the corner that he sits and smokes his little hookah on. He just kind of shambles off over to there. Don't rinse the shipping.
Did you wash all of that blood off of you? I've got a real good idea for it.
So the raftmaster has retired to his corner of the boat, and Ashkin declares the fact that he has been carefully searching the entire boat as the trip has gone on, just sort of box by box, crate by crate. And he decides that there's one box that he hasn't searched yet that he'd better go ahead and take a look at. And inside it, he finds a velvet box containing the item. Now, this is the item that the homunculus will later be coming for, if you recall from our last episode, that's what's going to be happening. He looks at it awfully closely, so I decided that there must be something for him to look for. And this is kind of a chance of me responding to what the players are doing in a way to make things not harder on them, but more interesting.
And this item is the item that is determined during character creation and world creation. So it'll be different for your group. Ours happens to be a coin, so go with whatever your group comes up with.
17 plus 8 is 25.
Your picks dance lightly in the golden lock, and it breathes open.
All right.
You immediately recognize it. A coin with the symbol of the rising sun. This coin with this symbol is the same coin, or at least the same kind of coin, that your dear mentor, Kantos, used to wear in his eye patch.
Which I always took was for good luck.
There's only the one single coin in this box.
Lift it out of there. Look for spiders first, though.
All right, spiders. Make your perception.
Spiders.
Spider boxes. 21.
Well, you're fairly certain there are no spiders in the crushed silk lining of this box, but you're also not sure that there's not something else. You're getting the heebs off it.
I'll use my pick to kind of poke the heebs.
Ashkin is examining this box very closely off by himself in the corner of the boat, and the other characters kind of are curious where he has gone off to and start scratching their heads about it. And so Kim's character decides to pay him a visit.
And this kind of highlights the new classes and the new races that are in 4.0. I wanted to try out a few new things so that we could run a comparison of 3.5 versus 4.0. The character class is Warlock, but the race that I'm playing is Eladrin, and they have a racial ability which is called Fae Step, and it allows them to teleport up to 5 squares. And you'll see how that's used by my character during this clip.
Besides, you can just pop up right in front of me. That's do a dirty trick.
Hi! Oh, Jesus!
Is he 5 squares away?
The whole boat is 5 squares away.
Well, the raft isn't terribly large. I'd say he's probably a little bit more than 5 squares away, but not much.
Well, I'll kind of amble over there to within 5 squares and then kind of go,
Oh, and just teleport over to him? Okay.
That's a dirty trick.
Roll your stealthiness versus his will.
Great, great ability if you're a thief, man, because you can really sneak the heck up on people.
A 14.
You successfully teleport right in next to him without him really noticing.
I'll just breathe down your neck and say, do you need some help with that?
With what?
So the group has decided to camp for the night on the side of the river, as is a typical sort of modus for the group. And Oshkin has gone over to the other raft that is also sort of parked nearby and is trying to rumor gather. Now, normally I would play this out in a much more sort of role-playing fashion, but we were starting to run a little short on time, and I knew there was a big encounter coming up, so I kind of compressed this into just me narrating.
This is important to get across a lot of the rumors that are going on, as well as to set up the general attitudes of the outpost and the surrounding outposts so that you can carry that on into further play.
Oshkin and Kim's character both are sort of information gathery type people. And in fact, all three made their characters sort of around the idea they're gathering information. So I thought that it would be sort of weird for them to hear this rumor for the first time from this other crew. And that's another reason I sort of narrated it rather than have it be told by the crew.
Just cheerfully start blurbing, you know, this is going on there. Crops failed in the far north again. Sharkmen attacked Sharktown. Shouldn't have named it Sharktown, but I named it Sharktown. Daring them to attack.
So one of the things that you know from your experience up at the outpost is that there are three outposts along the coast. There's the main sort of outpost, which was the original one, and that is the one that you served at with your companions and with Pantos. However, there are two other outposts that are kind of further up along the coast, and those outposts were built later. All of them were built under the king's command at one point or other. However, as time went on, they all sort of developed their own personality, their own sort of idiosyncrasies. They're all ostensibly working to protect the coastline from attack by pirates and sharkmen and so on and so forth. However, as time has gone on, it's almost been more of a competitive thing between them to see who can stop the most raids, who can have the longest time between losing somebody at the outpost, who can have
the best recruit.
Yeah, the best recruit.
Best recruiting class.
Yeah, the best. And after, you know, when things are slow, they do drill team. They do sword competitions between the outposts. Okay. At one point, when you were still serving at the outpost, you participated in a fairly lengthy series of duels that were sponsored between a couple of the outposts. And you held your own pretty well. Picked up a couple scars from it, as several of the guys from the northern outpost seemed to be very experienced with a small blade. Mm. Far more experienced than you would give fresh recruits at an outpost credit for, if you will.
Ringers.
Yes.
Ringers.
This healthy rivalry has unfortunately developed into a little bit more than that, to the point where over the last couple of years there has been accusations that one of the outposts has intentionally tricked a group of sharkmen into directly attacking one of the other outposts. And another accusation is that the chains in the harbor in front of the main outpost were intentionally let down to let a pirate ship in. That sort of thing.
That's not good.
And again, nothing has ever been proven. But, you know, to give you a kind of modern day analogy, imagine if it was the FBI and the CIA kind of not working together.
Man, that's
kind of a little bit of competition. And then take that and transpose it to Venezuela. And you might kind of get the impression of the climate that has gone on. The king, as his power has weakened, has had less and less to do. There was a time where he would come out once a year to visit the outpost to make sure everything was sort of with it. For the last 5 years, he has not left the city.
That's because he's old.
We know he can be dead on.
Yes, he is old.
So one of the things I really love about this group is that they're really willing to jump in and add their own ideas and role-playing as we go along. And I'm really hip with that, and I enjoy that. In the last clip, you heard Dan talk about sharks attacking Sharktown, which, you know, he just made up as part of a discussion when he was having with the other crew. And in this clip, Jeff is sort of ad-libbing things that he remembers from our initial discussion about how Kontos, the mentor, got his coin. Kim and I had had a very specific discussion about how he'd gotten it and had kind of come to some decisions about that. Since that discussion, I had come up with all sorts of different ideas and, in fact, one critical sort of plot reason why it hadn't shaken out the way that she and I had discussed. I had forgotten to tell her that that had changed, though, and so it gets a little weird.
This is where the train goes off the tracks. These kinds of things happen when the group has gotten together to do world creation and character creation, and during part of that discussion, Tim was not available. So he wasn't exactly aware of a lot of it. And there was a little bit of time travel and reality changing that happened, which leads later on to some complications.
Yep. So Kim and I ended up having to sit down and retcon a whole bunch of it later on, which, you know, that's how it goes. And that's why this isn't a novel. It's an interactive story.
Do you recall that there were some rumors that the civilization that existed in the area where the bog is now, mm-hmm. Which is prosaically called the Old Civilization, was known for being heavy worshippers of Arrakis.
The Old Kingdom, eh?
Yes.
Were they in any way associated with the current kingdom?
No.
Long ago.
Did they find anything, any of that sort of symbol in the diggings?
That's possible.
There's been some partial coins discovered with that on it, but again, most of the stuff that's been pulled out of the bog is bits and chunks and little gobs of gold.
They almost never find coinage. They find cups and chains.
Stonework or anything like that.
There's all kinds of ruins throughout mm-hmm. the bog, but really nothing with markings on it that still remain, at least none that you've heard of.
And no artifacts that have that symbol on it.
You know, you've heard rumors, but no one has ever directly said that. Again, a lot of the artifacts that come into the Lost Village go out just as quickly. Yeah. So.
Well, do you know where Kanto's got that coin? Did he?
I've asked him several times, but he evades the question. I assume that it came from a dig in the area, but I'm not sure where he was when the incident happened. It was before my time.
Well, it was during my time, but it was while I wasn't there. Kantos doesn't seem to be one to do much digging.
No.
Maybe it was a gift.
Maybe. I don't know. I got the impression that it was a prize. Something taken or won. Perhaps. And I could be wrong. That's simply my impression.
You do know that he was quite changed after he lost his eye.
Who wouldn't be?
As I understand, the situation of losing his eye has been somewhat emotional for him.
Mm. He seemed very accustomed to it by the time I met him.
He's learned to deal. I think the reason was more of the issue, not the actual physicality of it.
So again, they are camped for the night, and the role-playing continues, this time discussing the coin and the box that they had found, and how the coin and the box was shiny and new, but they knew that Kantos's was old and worn, and what that all meant.
It is also highlighting that the coin had been poisoned as well, and Oshkin suffered some of the ill effects from that.
And it also highlights the relationship that you and Oshkin had sort of previously that we had discussed in the character creation.
When we originally did world creation and character creation, one of the requirements was to have relationships amongst the party so that there was some cohesiveness. You can see that some of the discussion gets a little uncomfortable because we hadn't discussed all of this in full, but it all pans out in the end.
I know for a fact that most of my undergarments have been jostled about. I'm not entirely sure if that's you or Finnan.
I think it's Finnan.
But
don't look at me. We served together. I take nothing from.
Well, we went on many a voyage together. It's not exactly like it would be something you wouldn't know about.
You're under things?
Yes.
I just look puzzled and then look up at the sky.
If you're just like that, then you're under things. You know what I mean? Mystery.
Girls always have secrets. So are you wondering what that constellation is?
You've told me before.
You don't remember, though, do you?
I think we ought to follow that coin.
What?
I don't think it's important. I don't know if it's important. Aren't you? Important enough to poison.
Depends on who it's being sold to. If it's being sold to Kantos, then I don't care.
But being sold to Kantos.
Other than it's meant to poison him.
Not that serious of poison, I don't think.
How do you know? It was only on him for a bit.
Because I rolled a 17. Oh, sorry.
Does it seem to be deadly?
No, I agree. 17. It would have knocked me out if
it was very slow acting and it was easily washed off.
I would like to know a little bit more about its origins rather than anything else.
Of course, you could be trying to blame me for it.
Well, he's not going to be able to pass this one off as Kantos. Kantos is his worn. This is brand new.
I think it doesn't have anything to do with Kantos.
I think it has everything to do with whatever fellowship it belongs to.
Arrakis.
And that box. You don't just send a coin in a box like that.
They've been camping for a while. Most of the people have gone to sleep. Oshkin is on watch, but unfortunately the homunculus has used its power to daze Oshkin, and it is snuck onto the boat and crawled around. Unfortunately, the noise it's making has woken up Jeff's character, and it explained to Jeff's character that it was looking for the coin. At this point, Jeff's character decides to go and wake up the raft master and try to get him to help. And during that discussion, he does a fabulous impression of Sarsippius from Infectious Grooves.
We also get to see the differences between skill check names. Before in 3.5, there was Sense Motive and a number of other skills, which have been now combined into a new skill in 4.0, which is Insight.
And I'm going to wake up Finn.
What is it?
Somebody's here looking for the coin. You know what you're talking about?
What? What coin?
I don't know. He said he's here looking for the coin.
I don't know anything about a coin. Tell him to come back tomorrow when it's light.
I don't think this is the kind of thing that you want to put off till tomorrow.
What? Just tell him to bugger off. I gotta sleep if I'm gonna pilot this boat in the morning. We got some nasty sand coming up. Make a,
Can I make a Sense Motive or whatever?
Yeah, Insight. I was just looking at what the...
An Insight?
Yeah, Insight.
On Finn?
26.
You are positive that he has no idea what coin you were talking about.
Really?
In this clip, the conversation has been ongoing with the homunculus, and all of the party members are awake and actually can see it at this point. We are also discussing the exchange of money or information for the coin from the homunculus.
It's also getting later, and the 10-year-old refuses to go back and watch Doctor Who, and unfortunately is getting a little bored, and so he's maniacally rolling his dice at all times, and I wasn't able to edit all of that out.
It reaches into its stomach, deep into the clay of its stomach, and it pulls out a platinum plate. You've seen maybe a half dozen of them in your life. And it holds it up.
Do you see that?
Yes, out of the air, suddenly, your vision snaps into focus, Ashken, and the smell of platinum wafts to you in the air. You see a small creature standing on one of the crates on the deck of the raft, holding a platinum plate and looking Tempest in the eye.
So, what's that supposed to mean to me?
Yep.
That was that little thing. I
hope we find the coin. It's yours.
I told Finian he was here for the coin. He didn't know what the heck he was talking.
Tell me who your master is and I'll consider it.
Unfortunately, I do not know who my master is.
That's my prize.
At this point in the game, the homunculus has been trying to make a deal with Jeff's character, Seth, and my character, Tempest, and has had no luck. So he goes onshore where Dan's character, Ashken, has been hanging out and is attempting to make a deal with him.
And this is one where I took a look at the backgrounds of each of the characters, and I thought about, well, if this person is a well-known sort of trader of information and such, perhaps the person that sent him might have given the homunculus specific instructions to try talking with them. In addition, you can hear me making my best Monty Hall impression.
You see this creature fly over to you, and your eyes are locked on the platinum plate that it is carrying. It lands on a small bush next to you, looks you in the eye. Are you the dwarf?
That's a great question.
Dwarf?
Can you get the coin?
I was told that I might be able to negotiate with you to get the coin from this raft if I could not find it myself. I have been given a platinum plate. This plate could be yours. A low, low price of giving you a coin.
Well, it would be compromising my integrity as a passenger upon this plane. Just give you something that's not mine.
That's not what I was told you would say.
Well, I'm just feeling you out.
I had very specific instructions. I'm sorry. I was told to seek the dwarf and offer the platinum plate.
Instructions by whom?
My creator. I'm sorry, I do not know any more than they are my creator.
Where are they? I'll go talk to them.
A long distance from here. I'm not sure exactly where. Someone stuck a finger in my brain and rubbed out that part.
What are your instructions if the negotiation were to fall through?
Oh, simply to kill everyone on board and take the coin by force.
Okay. Well, let's go look at the coin.
After the threat of ultimate destruction after midnight, Ashken has made his way back to the raft to try to exchange the original coin for a fake dummy, and the homunculus is negotiating onward.
And this is where we get the introduction of the brass rod, which will later become extremely important in future parts of the story.
In his right claw is this lug of bronzy, coppery, brassy metal. It waves it over the coin. I'm sorry, that does not appear to be the correct coin. I cannot give you the platinum plate.
Oh, that thing can find the coin?
It tells me whether I have located the coin, yes.
Really? Cool.
Where do you need to take the coin once you have obtained it?
I wish that I could tell you, but someone stuck a finger in my clay brain and wiped that answer out.
So are you just to stand there and somebody will retrieve you?
I don't know. I just know that I need to get the coin before midnight, and the time is approaching. Could you please show me the coin now?
This clip is an exercise in the sliding scale of ethics. We are balancing Ashen's greed for platinum versus Tempest's curiosity about the origins of the coin. So we can really see the interplay between two characters who have been playing together for a while.
What am I having to play?
Is it really necessary?
I don't think it's necessary.
Then again, what are we going to do with that coin once we keep it? I'm assuming, of course, that you're going to keep it.
Well, I was going to keep it. I put it back.
Originally, you were planning on keeping it.
Are we going to talk about unlikely contingencies or what is...
I'm just saying, for instance, so we don't have any need to keep the coin. We know that it's there.
I don't feel like being contrary just because he wants it. I don't feel like we should deny him.
Well, but do you plan on giving Finian the platinum plate then?
No.
It is his cargo.
He's not looking for somebody. They're foolish enough to leave it here. If we weren't here, the demon would take it.
So Tempest and Ashton and Seth continue their discussions about what to do and whether they should give the coin to the homunculus or not. But unfortunately, midnight comes, and with that comes initiative.
Oh, I am afraid it is midnight and I do not have the coin. Oh, I have new instructions in my brain. I am to kill everyone on the boat.
Well, that settles it.
Roll initiative.
So the battle ensues, and after a pretty long and lengthy and interesting battle with it jumping around and using various abilities, we're getting down towards the end here, not quite to the very end, and the homunculus decides to use its redirect attack power. And of course, it's waiting to do that until Seth manages to pull off a crit again. And this is where the fact that the crits do max damage instead of double damage works in the party's favor, because he manages to redirect the attack over onto Ashken.
Healing strike against the nearest to me.
Yes.
19.
Woohoo!
Double damage. 6 and 2 is 8.
Okay, your strike comes whipping down at this thing, and it looks like it's going to do a tremendous amount of damage to it. And at the last second, it goes, and twists your mind a little, and the strike instead lands deeply into Oshkin's side for 8 points of damage.
Damn you. That's unfortunate. Well, how about this? You are able to use a healing surge then. Have you been nothing? So whatever your surge value is, you can reduce. Or you just want to.
Net damage.
All right. So after a long and exciting battle, the homunculus is about to meet its end here. And in addition, it gets knocked off the raft with the brass rod that it was carrying, which the group has now decided is an awfully important thing. And so Ashken will jump in to try and grab it as well.
The bits of the homunculus that are left on the raft then dissolve, and you can see party member greed taking over by collecting some of that in good old-fashioned D&D.
It goes flying off the side of the boat, and it and the little brass bar go whoosh down the river.
Cool. Clay dissolves in water.
Oh, yeah.
Enjoy. Have you seen a plate sitting anywhere?
The platinum plate laying on the deck right where it was.
Hey, grab that. I'll grab it back. I'll go jump.
Go looking for that brass bit.
Like looking.
Okay, it is midnight.
It is dark.
Uh-huh. Yes,
you do have low light vision.
I'm a dwarf, and it's
a dwarf.
It's metal,
and it is metal. Perhaps valuable metal. I will give you 2 perception checks. You will need to get a 15 or higher on both of them to find in the rushing river at midnight.
Okay. Oh, I got a 13. The other one makes it, but a 13 on the second.
You saw it flash by, and then it whips down the river, and you chase after it, and it's gone.
All right.
You end up right next to the other raft, and one of the drunken raftmen looks down and is like, "You taking a midnight bath?
Ye boy, jump something off my raft."
All right, there's a puddle of clay on the boat and a platinum plate.
I want to poke at the clay.
It is mixed with an interesting kind of dust. Make an arcana roll.
The amount.
I think I would know.
Okay, you're pretty sure that the dust that's in this clay is actually probably pretty valuable.
Try to scoop it up. Okay. Vial it up.
Yep, you vial it up. You don't get very much, maybe about an ounce. Pretty sure to the right wizard, you could sell this for some good coin. And of course, if you want to make your own homunculus.
So it's the next morning, and the raftmaster has awoken, and he's vaguely remembering being woken up in the middle of the night and asked about a coin and is trying to figure out what's going on.
The party is now a little reticent to give the coin that they found or the platinum plate that was offered in exchange by the homunculus to the raftmaster. So there's a bit of fast talking going on.
We thought that somebody was coming on board the raft, but we got rid of them, so it's no big deal.
Were they going to come back this morning, or what's the deal?
I would have went, oh, what a horrible dream around myself. But what?
You know, they decided that this was probably the wrong raft, after all.
Oh, all right. Well, whatever.
I was thinking about our deal, and, you know, you're good enough to have me aboard if you think 25% is your due. I mean, I still object, but okay.
He blinks blearily. I knew you'd see the light. I knew you'd see the light, Ashki.
I just don't want any trouble.
All right. Good deal. Well, tonight we'll be in the Lost Village, and we'll see how things go there. I expect things will go real well.
All right. Well, that concludes session one. We took about 2.5-3 hours of material and have compressed it now to about an hour with commentary. So hopefully you've gotten the highlights and see how it ran and how it can run for your group and gotten ideas on either how you want to do it the same or different. And hopefully you'll be able to run this, you know, and have at least as much fun as we did.
If you have any questions or thoughts on this episode or any other episode, you can get a hold of us on our forums at spookyouthouse.com.
Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Return to Northmoor, a podcast released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 2.5 license by Tim White and Kim Stone. Our theme music is Charge of the Valiant from Dronolin's Tower, Legends of Kithelin Volume 1, Tales of the Long Forgotten, used by permission of its composer, David Alan Young. Find out more about their fantastic gaming music at dronolin.com. Visit us and many other fine podcasts at spookyouthouse.com.